superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
Are you brave enough to visit a spooky mansion or haunted or both this Halloween?
One of the things that's neat about the Duluth Haunted Ship is we have aromas in rooms so that we're really manipulating all of your senses.
Plus,
my mom was a giant at 12 years old.
Her music celebrates the influence of strong women, and she isn't afraid to get political. We'll catch up with Elska. But first,
Wentworth is the home of the Big Stick. It's home of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, and at one point, the best hockey in America was played here.
It's the biggest hit documentary in theaters this year, and it's the real life story of our region's favorite pastime. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you've never seen a documentary in a movie theater, or even if you have, now's the time to go. Hockeyland premiered in theaters this summer and quickly became the number one documentary in the country. And if we didn't tell you it was a doc or a true story, you could mistake it for a Hollywood feature film. The stars are a group of teen boys from the Iron Range and Hermantown, but they didn't audition for the parts. Rather, they worked for their entire young lives as soon as they could hold a hockey stick. But I'm getting ahead of the story. Here to tell us about it is the director and creator, Tommy Haynes. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Hey, thanks, Robin. Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to try very hard not to give any plot spoilers, but I have to say, you had no idea of the plot, I'm thinking, when you started this, right? It's about high school hockey teams from Eveleth on the Range in Hermantown. Set it up for us by telling us why you chose these two teams.
Well, yeah, and I don't think it was totally fortuitous on the path of who we chose. We did about 5 years of research, kind of looking at what teams would have interesting stories coming into that 2019-2020 season. And the first big news that we heard about was this team, Eveleth in Minnesota, is a storied program. Olympians have come from here. NHLers have come from this program. It's where the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame is located. And this is a team that had won 7 state titles, but mostly back in the 50s. And so this was a team that was going to consolidate with a neighboring school, Virginia. And we knew this was going to be either their last season or one of their last seasons that they'd be around. So that was kind of something that really prompted us to start filming. And then just luckily that night when we went into the exploratory shoot with the Eveleth team, they were playing Hermantown that night. So we met Hermantown then as well, and then thought, you know, it'd be great to just kind of capture both stories and see where they would take us.
Wentworth is the home of the Big Stick. It's home of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, and at one point, the best hockey in America was played here.
4-7 state championships.
What better way to get things going this hockey season with the old Iron Range stalwart, the Eveleth Gilbert Golden Bears, and the top-ranked Hermantown Hawks?
And we also knew that the Eveleth team had 15 returning seniors, which a team of 20, that's a lot of seniors to have in that team. So we knew there'd be like a lot of drama and a lot of this heartfelt emotion that was going to happen with the Eveleth squad, no matter what happened with their season.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you describe it, too, because you're sort of giving it as an outsider point of view. You're talking to us from Iowa. Is that where you're from?
I'm actually from a little town called Mountain Iron. That's where I grew up playing. It's about 5 to 10 miles away from Eveleth.
Oh, okay. Well, then you do know all this stuff, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But I happen to be living in Iowa City now. I grew up in the Iron Range and moved to the Twin Cities as a teenager. So, yeah, no, I know Minnesota high school hockey pretty well.
You're also familiar with filmmaking and documentaries. You directed the 2008 film Pond Hockey, which has got a lot of accolades. And you've done 5 feature length documentaries. I'm thinking, though, an obvious influence has to be Hoop Dreams, which is the very prestigious documentary that chronicled years of the lives of 2 African-American high school students in Chicago who were dreaming of becoming NBA stars. They spent forever, the documentary team, on their lives. You said 5 years from concept or so. So how long did you think you were going, you know, had you planned on, oh, let's do this for the next 10, 20 years?
Yeah, well, Hoop Dreams is a great thing to bring up because that's a film that I watched in high school and was pretty influential. And then I also was influenced by the TV series Friday Night Lights. And so both those two I think I, what I liked about Hoop Dreams was just the intimacy that Steve James got with those boys in Chicago. And they're telling their personal stories. But then there's some cinematic qualities to the way the Friday Night Lights was shot that I really like. And so I hired my DP, Ben Handler. I had been working on fictional films before this one, and I kind of wanted that feel to this, that it actually, like you said in the intro, it almost feels like a fictionalized film. And that's, I think, partly due to just how we shot it. But then, you know, I know high school hockey so well, and it's such a big thing in Minnesota, and I really hadn't seen a feature-length doc done about that. And so that's why, you know, I mean, it, probably from concept, it had been 15 years. I'd been kind of wanting to make this, but it really started, man, within the last 5 years, I was like, oh, okay, we really got to find the story here and make this thing happen.
I want to get to a significant part of that timeline, which, of course, is COVID. That happens right after, or maybe right at the tail end of the film. But before we do that, I'll remind people we are speaking with Tommy Haynes. He's the director of Hockeyland, the documentary that has taken the country by storm with the story of the lives and rivalry of high school hockey players from Eveleth and Hermantown. Let's hear another clip from it. What would you recommend?
So this is just a clip from the trailer and kind of digging into kind of you hearing both the coaches kind of giving preparatory speeches before the big game, before Hermantown and Eveleth meet for the first time.
It's your year. It's your show. We here will follow you to hell and back, but this is on you.
Stand up to the big bad bullies out there and work them into the ground.
You are some of the best hockey players in the state, which puts you as some of the best hockey players in the country.
Let's go out there right now and shut them down. Let's go, boys. Come on, boys.
And that was a clip from Hockeyland, the documentary about the lives and rivalry of high school hockey players from Eveleth and Hermantown. We were talking about Hoop Dreams, again, being, you know, a standard of very committed documentaries when you spend decades with your principals. But there is a difference in that the odds of the kids in Hoop Dreams making it to the NBA were probably, you know, much less than the kids in your program making it to professional hockey because, this is where they all come from.
Yeah, I mean, a large percentage of players from the NHL come from Minnesota specifically. I mean, obviously, Wisconsin has players like Phil Kessel and Ryan Suter and Michigan and Boston as well, but a large majority of players that come from the United States come from Minnesota. So, yeah, this is I wouldn't say it's a realistic dream, but it's a dream that I think some of the
slightly
elite players,
more realistic dream.
Yeah, yeah. Slightly more realistic for sure. Yeah. Yep.
And not to say that they aren't, you know, major basketball players from Chicago. Absolutely. But Chicago's got about 3 million people, too. So.
Right.
The second difference is you did have a story arc with the impending end of Eveleth as an independent school, as you pointed out, before its merger, which happened in, 2021. And then also the ascendancy of Hermantown as a hockey powerhouse.
Yeah. And those are kind of two storylines that were key to us. But I think beyond those kind of overarching storylines, we really wanted to focus in on what the kids' experiences were. And so we followed four boys, two from Eveleth and two from Hermantown. And that's really what we wanted the heart of the story to be about, like what their experience was like, what win or lose, what's that experience like playing high school hockey in Minnesota. And so that was always something that me as the director and as the editor of the film, I was always keeping an eye on are we sticking to like what is the experience that they're going through and how are some of the issues that they may be having, whether that's an injury or whether that's a family sickness or whatever it might be, how that's affecting these four protagonists in our film.
Well, let's hear a bit of those stories as you and your crew capture them on film.
Going into this season, I feel pressure, absolutely.
Biggest goal for Elliot was to get him off the range, because up here when he's not playing hockey, he gets in trouble.
Blake has not just a chance, like a real chance of playing in the NHL.
Your name Blake too? Awesome.
If I don't end up doing it like as a career, I've always been pretty good at school.
I've had back pain for as long as I can remember. I didn't think I could put myself through the grind of juniors to try and make that college level. That was a dream of mine.
You only get so many opportunities and then they're gone.
And it's a championship game. You need to be great.
And that was a clip from Hockeyland, the documentary about Minnesota high school teams from Eveleth and Hermantown, directed by our guest, Tommy Haynes. In addition to telling of their blossoming hockey careers, you also told the stories of their family lives and other things they were dealing with. Along those lines, you have an unexpected story arc in the mother of one of the players who has cancer. And again, I don't want to give away that either, but that was, I assume, unexpected.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of a casting process like you would do with a fictional film in a lot of ways. I mean, there's 20 boys on each team, and we knew Blake Biondi. He's one of the elite players. So I think going in, we knew that he was going to be one of the four main characters in the film. Elliot Van Orsdale, when I first met him in 2018 as a junior, he was so natural on camera, and he was very authentic. And a lot of the kids oftentimes are trying to show off with the camera or be kind of closed off, and where Elliot was just really natural and really honest with us right away. So those two I had kind of picked from the start. But yeah, Indy O'Dowd and Will Trotwine were guys that we kind of cast, you know, a third of the way, halfway through the process of like, oh, these are guys I really want to focus on. And like you mentioned, Indio's mom dealing with cancer, and she's got MS and working three jobs. And so there's just so much there in that Dowd story that we want to follow and just see how that would play out for someone that was dealing with so much beyond even the hockey world. It's like there's so much involved in his life and so much mm-hmm. he has to deal with as a 17-year-old.
And again, you're saying that, you know, you figured out who were going to be the primary people to focus on after you'd already started working on it. What did you most regret leaving on the cutting room floor? By the way, I noticed that Duluth East isn't mentioned at all, or Superior, or Northwestern in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But yeah, what did you regret leaving on the cutting room floor?
Oh, well, I think, it's a challenge. A couple of things are a challenge. One is just, we started filming with 10 boys from the start, and the same thing you're seeing on screen in this film, Hockeyland, we are, you know, going to dinners with these kids and going on dates. And so there's just a lot of great scenes with other players from the teams that it just didn't fit into the movie. And then, yeah, of course, each team's playing about 20 games in the season. And so you just can't fit that into a, you know, feature length film showing every single game. So they're mm-hmm. rendering against Proctor, Superior, Duluth East, or what have you. We just can't fit all of that in. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, they didn't even play Duluth East in that year. I don't think they played until the following year. So, but we try to include like pivotal games, poignant games when they're all sick playing against Grand Rapids, or, you know, a big win, a last second win against International Falls. Like, we try to include kind of the more poignant games.
We're speaking with Tommy Haynes, the director of Hockeyland, about the rivalry between high school hockey players in northern Minnesota. One more area I think also must have been unexpected was the pandemic. This was actually the 2019-2020 season, which had to end right when the pandemic started, or maybe it was truncated. Yeah. You couldn't have expected this because the whole world didn't expect this.
No, I didn't. I mean, although my wife works in the hospital system, so I kind of knew something was coming in February. Mm-hmm. But the state tournament for Minnesota was March 7th, the finals that year, and the Mr. Hockey Award ceremony was March 8th, and the governor shut the state down on March 11th, so 3 days later. So all those tournaments that were the next weekend, all those kids couldn't play in the finals. So I can't imagine what this film would have been like without having the state tournament involved in the kind of arc of the teams. So yeah, very, very fortuitous, very lucky. And then for me to be able to kind of isolate myself and work on the editing for the next, you know, the following year and a half to make the film, all that timing just kind of worked out for us. So I feel very, very fortunate for sure.
That is amazing. We've had many musicians and other artists on the program because of COVID, because they couldn't get out to perform. And we realized, hey, we're a radio station. Why don't you come on the air, you know? And
yeah,
you know, we can hear your music. And a good number of them found themselves either producing albums or whatever during that time. But not quite the same as yours, where you had the bulk of the project there and it's time to edit. And yeah, how weird that COVID would happen, as you said, fortuitously, although terribly so.
Yeah.
The other aspect of that, though, is the careers or lives of the students in the program. So it had to affect the players going into their first year of college or junior hockey. How are they doing now?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it really did put the whole world on pause for a year. And so, yeah, these kids are heading into junior programs, or, you know, Blake Biondi is heading to, you know, UMD. And it kind of just pauses all that.
He's there now?
He's playing there now. He's a junior on the team now. But
okay, yeah.
COVID kind of paused all sports and the whole world for about a year. So it made things tough on all the guys. But yeah, now Blake's playing on the top line at UMD for Division I program. And then Will Trawine's heading out to Holy Cross next year to play Division I. He's actually playing for Janesville in Wisconsin, for the Janesville Jets, playing, you know, NAHL junior hockey. And then Elliot Van Orsdale is currently playing for Southern Maine Division III program. So those three are all still playing hockey. And of course, you learn in our film, Indio's having back problems, and he's at NDSU just as a student. He's going to graduate earlier this year. Yeah, obviously retired from playing hockey, but now just plays with his brother and kind of recreationally still plays. But yeah, obviously the back issues is kind of, it was too tough for him to keep going.
Right. Again, without divulging any spoilers here. Lastly, Hoop Dreams did not actually win an Academy Award. You look back and you kind of expected that it did, but it didn't. But it is considered one of the greatest documentaries of all time. You've not done bad with your works, pond hockey. And you're getting tons of accolades right now. Will success ruin Tommy Haynes?
Will success ruin me? Well, you know, maybe if I was younger. I think now that I'm in my mid-40s and this is my, you know, six feature-length film that I've made, I don't think so. And it's so competitive. I mean, the documentary world now is, there's so many great films, and I'm part of that community, and a lot of my friends are winning prestigious awards as well. This is our first time we've had a Critic Choice nomination. So that's kind of it starts the award season here. And so I'll be heading out in November to New York for that ceremony. But I think as far as Oscars and everything else, that's pretty far fetched. And especially with sport films, it's hard to get an Oscar. I think that's part of what Hoop Dreams have to deal with. But if this is something that people are talking about in 10 to 20 years, like Steve James's film Hoop Dreams, that would be amazing. That's more of what would be important to me. I think it's a film that, you know, celebrates, you know, high school hockey and the culture of high school hockey in Minnesota. But I think it also just is a film that, you know, looks at how we're raising our boys these days and kind of the pressure that's put on teenage boys. And hopefully that's something that resonates with a lot of families too, and something that people will want to watch for decades.
Right. You know, one more thing on that, the narrative, there's no narration. So it really does feel like a feature film. Again, it's beautifully shot and beautifully edited. It's not a Ken Burns documentary, which is not to say anything bad about Ken Burns. And then also, you did go the theater route. What was the decision behind that versus appearing on PBS or somewhere like that?
Well, our last film, Saving Brittany, came out in 2018. That was our first film that we had done the theater out with. And so this one, I kind of knew how to do that, knew the approach to do it. And so this was always the idea, and the goal was to be in theaters on the big screen. And that's why we had hired this DP to come in and film it. And just the big look and sound of hockey, it's such a cinematic thing by nature. But you never know. I mean, it's very competitive to be in theaters. And so I feel fortunate that Greenwich Entertainment, who also distributed Free Solo, Oscar winner, and also kind of a sports, niche sports film, right? So they picked us up and distributed us into 170 theaters nationwide. So that was great. That was amazing. And so that's more of the reason was that, you know, if people could see this film in the theater, that was always the goal. But now people have, you know, giant TV screens at home and great,
right,
great systems of their own. So now that we're streaming on, you know, Apple and Amazon, all those platforms, it's hopefully people are enjoying the film in the comfort of their own home as well.
Right. And you answered the question I was going to ask lastly, which is where can we find it? And Apple and Amazon, and look up Hockey Land.
Yeah.
We've been speaking to Tommy Haynes. He's the director and creator of Hockey Land. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Robin, thanks a lot for having me on, and always great to talk to a fellow documentarian.
Let's go! Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our musical guest hails from Duluth, where she's quite familiar with those endless winters you hear her singing about. She also hails from a family of, not quite a shocker here, Swedish and Norwegian descent. She incorporates that in her music, but she also has a political streak that began as a political science major at the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities. She thought that would lead to becoming a high school social studies teacher, but music beckoned instead. She now makes her home in the Twin Cities, but of course performs back home as well as around the country. And she joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Elska. Or should we call you Elsa Lee, which I think is a name you went by when you were up here.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. And honestly, either is fine. In my home and everyday life, I still go by Elsa Lee. But as you mentioned, some of this music gets political and challenging. And so I've adopted a sort of stage artist persona to get those messages across, which is Elska.
Ah, okay. And then people who, you know, may not be happy about it can't find you as readily, right?
That's right. It's a little bit of protection. It's a little bit of a shield. It's a little bit of just another vessel, just a way that I get to show up in this world.
And does that also incorporate some of that Norwegian and Swedish descent? It sounds like it.
Yes, actually, when we first started writing and thinking about how we wanted to get this message out there, it was pretty early on in the process that a band name, stage name, artist name was going to be a part of the equation. And so in trying to figure out what that was, I actually turned to an old Norse dictionary and was just looking up words like light and joy and persistence and all of these things. And then my name actually is Scandinavian. It shows up in a lot of Scandinavian cultures. And so I was wondering if there's anything that sounded like my name. And Elska is actually an old Norse word that translates to love, like as the action to love. So it sounded a lot like me and it felt right. A lot of this music is driven by love, love of community, love of self, love of these issues that we're fighting for. So that's how that came to be.
We can't go wrong with love. So we are speaking with singer-songwriter Elska, whose name means love, and also previously known in our neck of the woods as Elsa Lee. Your first album, released last year, was On the Shoulders of Giants. So who are the giants whose shoulders you're standing on?
That particular song, it's the women who came before us, specifically my mother and aunties and grandmothers, but culturally and socially, the generations of women who fought for our ability to speak up about our own experiences. It was specifically for this compilation record that was released prior to this record, which was the hashtag #MeTooMinneapolis compilation, which was a bunch of artists in the metro area who wrote music about the Me Too movement. And I used that prompt to just lift up the generations of women who came before us to give us the opportunity to have our stories heard.
Mm-hmm. So you draw from your Nordic heritage, but I also notice a reference to Nina Simone as one of your influences.
Oh, yes, I love Nina. She, I think, said it better than any other artist who was making political, social statements in their music. She once said, and I'm going to butcher it, but it was something to the effect of, it's an artist's duty to reflect the times. And I take that sentiment very seriously. Embarking in this musical journey, I wanted to release music that had a message and a purpose and was motivating for social change. And Nina Simone is the best example of that.
All right. Counting Nina Simone as one of your giants, here is On the Shoulders of Giants.
Told to stay quiet, decided to speak. just a pariah, girl, you shouldn't be. But she did it for her and she did it for me. My sister's a giant at 5'9". A sword and a shield and a drawer of lies. I can still feel his touch and it burns like an eye.
And that was On the Shoulders of Giants, performed and written by our guest Elska, who is lauding the giants that influenced her growing up. You just did a session, I read, in New York, a direct-to-vinyl session. So is this sort of a back-to-the-future technology kind of thing?
A little bit. It's actually a pretty interesting concept. They have a full studio setup, and in real time, it is cut, it's lathe cut to a 7-inch vinyl, and it's one single, no more than 5 minutes, and each vinyl is personalized. So there was this pre-order process where people can choose a song. Most of them came from that last record, but we did sneak one new song in there. And in real time, it's cut, and that's the only place that that recording exists. So it's sent to the people who pre-order it, and we actually never get to hear it. It's never digitized. So a little bit back to the future, for sure.
Wait, you're saying so there's actually simply one record, right?
That's right.
Get pressed after that?
That's right. So it's an individual pre-order. People can order what song they want, and then it's a personalized recording straight to vinyl.
Which song was that?
Well, so we had a few songs available, but it seemed like the most we recorded was Hummingbird, On the Shoulders of Giants, and Endless Winter were some of the popular ones.
Okay. Well, your new single is called Bounty Hunter, and you make an unambiguous political message in it, or maybe it's a response to a political message. Tell us about that.
This is the most controversial, challenging piece of music released so far. It was written as a response specifically to the Texas Heartbeat Act, where they essentially deputized their citizens to turn in their neighbors, any person who helped a woman exercise her right to choose, for the reward of not less than $10,000, and incentivizing these communities to turn each other in simply for a woman exercising her right to choose really was very bothersome to me, which is why this song came into being. And the production, I guess, of it was expedited when the leaked opinion overturning Roe v. Wade came out in the summer. And then it actually was officially, the Dobbs decision came down before we were able to release it, but we got it out as quickly as we could. So definitely a political back and forth.
Well, here is Bounty Hunter by our guest, Elska.
It's a comedy.
And that was Bounty Hunter by our guest Elska. It is, as we said, unapologetically political. But you just told us your name means love, and you also have songs that are more about relationships and emotions, I take it?
Yeah, that's true. There on this new record, we have a song that is unapologetically a journey of a love story. And on the previous record,
you're not apologizing about anything, right?
That's true. That is actually part of why this Elska project came into being. I read a book once called Girl Stop Apologizing, and I think that is a message for women everywhere, is to show up unapologetically. These songs about relationships, though, also are held in the same hands as mental health related issues like anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to recommend one to take us out?
I would love to recommend Endless Winter. It's one of my favorites and just speaks very honestly about the experience of depression. And especially being in the Northland, I think we can all appreciate what it means to live in an endless winter.
Are you talking about those days getting shorter and the chill in the air and 20 below? Oh. No, that doesn't affect us at all.
I do, being a North Country girl, I do love a good, cozy winter. But sometimes when we are ready for the sun to come out, it doesn't always feel like it does. So this this song kind of lives in that world where it's just cold and we need a little sunshine.
All right. And as we're waiting for the sunshine, can you tell us where we can find out more about your music?
Yes. My website is hielska.com. And then both the On the Shoulders of Giants record and Bounty Hunter are now available on all streaming platforms. And there will be more to come.
All right. We've been speaking with Twin Ports native and now Twin Cities resident, singer-songwriter Elska. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
To welcome endless winter. It's to embrace the cold that never left, to lock yourself in shelter, to chase away the hope of summer's breath. Oh,
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our regular news team, Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune and WPR's Danielle Kading, are both away this week. But of course, the big news is it's Halloween weekend. And for that, we bring you Danny's perennial report of spooky stuff going on at Superior's Fairlawn Mansion, followed by the really scary haunted ship in Duluth. Here's Danny's tour of the historic home, led by Superior Public Museums coordinator, Stacy Buchanan.
Fairlawn Mansion was built in the 1890s by Martin and Grace Pattison. He was a lumber baron and a mining baron in the area. He built Fairlawn after he became mayor of Superior. They lived in the house up until about 1920, and so it was used as a children's home from 1920 to 1962. And then after the children's home was closed, they decided to use it as a museum.
So there's been a lot of people coming and going over the years through that house.
A lot. With the children's home, we've had an estimated about 2,000 children come through the house.
And so every year you put on these flashlight tours.
Yeah, we do the flashlight tours. What we do is we talk about the superstitions of life in the Victorian era, be it marriage or death, ghosts. There's a couple of different topics that they can pull from, but you do get to go through the house in the dark. So that's kind of the best part.
So what are some of the superstitions then that you talk about on the tour?
When I was doing flashlight tours, probably my favorite topic to talk about was death during that time. They didn't have funeral homes like we think of now. So most of the funerals would have taken place in the home itself. And so different superstitions they had with death. You had to cover up the mirrors so you wouldn't get possessed, how funerals would have taken place in a home such as Fairlawn. Some of the dress, like we think of, you know, you have to wear darker clothing, but actually they had very specific directions for whoever the family member was related to. They had issues with the clocks. They always stopped all of the clocks at the time of death. They did think that you could get possessed very easily or be taken with them to death.
Well, why did they think that at that time?
We don't know. Victorian is probably one of the most superstitious time era. They took a lot of what they learned from medieval times, so they were just obsessed with it. It was just the thing that they did.
And so were there any types of these funerals held at Fairlawn Mansion?
Martin Pattison did pass away in 1918, so he would have had a funeral at that time, and that would have taken place at Fairlawn.
And so you've worked in this house for 13 years.
Yeah.
And so any stories about that?
I do not personally have any stories. I have never come across anything. There are many stories out there, and we do touch on a couple of the biggest ones during the flashlight tours. We put it out there that we let you believe what you want to believe.
And so what are some of the things that people have said over the past they might have experienced?
I would have to say probably the biggest stories would be from staff members hearing children's laughter or playing near the pool in the basement. There was a story well out on the internet for many years that talks about two kids who would have drowned in the pool during the children's home. One of the other big stories that are out on the internet that's been out for years is that there's a servant who passed away suspiciously after she had left and married, and she came back to Fairlawn because it was the place that she was comfortable and felt welcome. And so she is spotted in many areas of the house, either helping tour guides when they get lost or anything like that.
And that was Superior Public Museums coordinator Stacy Buchanan speaking with our own Danielle Kading about the historic Fairlawn Mansion. The mansion's haunted Halloween tours will be held tomorrow afternoon for families and evening for adults who don't scare as easily. Information is at superiorpublicmuseums.org. That's superiorpublicmuseums.org. And if you're still not scared enough, you can head over to Duluth, where the retired ore boat, the William A. Irvin, has been decked out as the haunted ship. Lucy Amundson of the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center gave me a tour, if I promise not to scream too loudly.
We're in the belly of the ship. We're in the hull. This is where iron ore would have been transported. But the tour takes you throughout the ship.
So I'm looking at something that looks like a rather large on-off master switch to
let's say, the electrical system of your house, and you're telling me to pull it down, which
pull
I will.
Switch.
And my hair is not standing straight up, but then again, I just got it cut.
That was the electric chair portion.
Oh, okay. People want to see electric chairs. Okay.
Now we're in a barnyard scene. And typically, one of the things that's neat about the Duluth Haunted Ship is we have aromas in rooms so that we're really manipulating all of your senses, that this typically smells very barnyard-like.
Something you wouldn't expect on an ore boat.
No.
Describe what we're walking in right now. First of all, I see somebody's head hanging on a chain on the wall. Several heads.
Oh, if you've seen Stranger Things, there's a lot of vines covering bodies in places with highlighted paints, and it is quite something. Do you want to walk in there?
Sure. Well, you're telling me to walk into something that is completely dark and a little bit low. I'll have to scoot under. Yep. Well, let's see what happens. I didn't see the body hanging from the ceiling until I turned around.
He gyrates up and down.
Oh.
This is...
Well, it's just a bathroom, except, of course, there's blood on the wall and cadavers and a bathtub filled with...
I think maggots.
Entrails, yes. Okay.
That could be... We have a faucet.
Oh, nice red water in the faucet.
Kind of the shack at the edge of the woods. You can just see how much effort went into this haunted shack and making it look like it's on fire.
Well, I seem to be in a child's playroom here.
You're in the doll's room, which to get out of the doll's room, you have to go through the closet.
Uh-huh.
But you can see that this is a real phobia for a lot of people who believe that, you know, dolls are creepy. So if you have a creepy doll phobia, we have a room for you.
Oh, great. And people really want to come here and get scared.
Yes.
So tell us one more time what the hours, days.
This is the last weekend to experience the Duluth Haunted Ship. It's going to be this Friday and Saturday, and actually Monday, Halloween Monday as well. You can find ticket and hour information at DuluthHauntedShip.com.
All right, or just come down to, well, where that big ore boat is, the William A.
Right.
Irvin, right? Outside of the deck. If you don't know that, you're in the wrong Twin Ports. Yes.
Right. You've got to come down to Canal Park and where the giant red ship. I think you'll see it.
All right. Thank you, Lucy Amundson.
Thank you, Robin. This has been fun.
And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with something not scary at all. More of the music of Elska. And as always, particularly on Halloween, stay safe, everyone.
If I could just find a hummingbird, I bet I'd make him stay. Just too fast, too colorful, too bad they don't remain in the same place. Check out that hummingbird, he can't make up his mind. Cause he's not like any other bird, cause just when he decides